weekends here, and your Tech Concierge offers a more casual fare over the air. I'll review this past week's Tech Talk tips and open a buffet of Tech Gourmet Q&A on Saturday and Sunday. Put on your favorite headphones. Call in, comment, and don't be shy. I'm looking forward to hearing from you. Stay tuned. The fun has only just begun, and you never know what you might learn.
Connectivity is an amazing thing. By now, we're all used to the instant connectivity that puts the world at our fingertips. From desktops or devices, we can purchase, post, pin, and pick anything, anywhere. We are connected to the world and each other like never before. But how does it happen? How does data get from here to there? How do different devices and applications connect with each other to allow us to place an order, make a reservation, or book a flight with just a few taps or clicks? The unsung hero of our connected world is the Application Programming Interface, or API. It's the engine under the hood and is behind the scenes that we take for granted, but it's what makes possible all the interactivity we've come to expect and rely upon. But exactly what is an API? It's a question everyone asks. Okay, not really, but we're glad you did. The textbook definition goes something like this. In computer programming, an application programming interface, API, is a set of routines, protocols, and tools for building software applications. An API expresses a software component in terms of operations, inputs, outputs, and underlying types. Okay, to speak plainly, an API is the messenger that takes requests and tells a system what you want to do, and then returns the response back to you. To give you a familiar example, think of an API as a waiter in a restaurant. Imagine you're sitting at the table with a menu of choices to order from, and the kitchen is the part of the system which will prepare your order. What's missing is the critical link to communicate your order to the kitchen and deliver your food back to your table. That's where the waiter, or API, comes in. The waiter is the messenger that takes your request, or order, and tells the system, in this case, the kitchen, what to do, and then delivers the response back to you, in this case, food. Now that we've whetted your appetite, let's apply this to a real API example. You're probably familiar with the process of searching for airline flights online. Just like at a restaurant, you have a menu of options to choose from, a drop-down menu in this case. You choose a departure city and date, a return city and date, cabin class, and other variables. In order to book your flight, you interact with the airline's website to access the airline's database to see if any seats are available on those dates and what the cost might be based on certain variables. But what if you're not using the airline's website, which has direct access to the information? What if you are using an online travel service that aggregates information from many different airlines? The travel service interacts with the airline's API. The API is the interface that, like your helpful waiter, can be asked by that online travel service to get information from the airline system over the internet to book seats, choose meal preferences, or baggage options. It also then takes the airline's response to your request and delivers it right back to the online travel service, which then shows it to you. So now you can see that it's APIs that make it possible for us all to use travel sites. The same goes for all interactions between applications, data, and devices. They all have APIs that allow computers to operate them, and that's what ultimately creates connectivity. So whenever you think of an API, just think of it as your waiter running back and forth between applications, databases, and devices to deliver data and create the connectivity that puts the world at our fingertips. And whenever you think of creating an API, think MuleSoft.
This is your Tech Talk Tip Recap for Saturday, 11/4/17, where I take you through a quick review of all we did do this week on the shoe. Starting last weekend, 10/28, we got our Saturday off to an international start with a global record with friends featuring anchor community members from Australia, Canada, England, Ireland, California, and Pennsylvania. That was me. As we tested the capabilities of our newest anchor feature, Record with Friends, demonstrating how up to 7 members can participate in this exciting interactive option. On Sunday, 10/29, Just Jennifer, my friend, asked for tips on downloading the Anchor version 1 archives, and I shared some. Miss Eileen called in with feedback for our Record with Friends session. We discussed best recording techniques for the Record with Friends feature, how best to organize a Record with Friends session, and other pertinent questions regarding Record with Friends. DJ Hay called in and shared a YouTube link to an informative video entitled Blind People Tell Us Which Questions Annoy Them Most. Kelly Hill called in with some voiceover concerns, and I recommended pursuing assistance via the Anchor team at support@anchor.fm, which I always do, when only they can provide the solution. On Motown Monday, 10:30, my daughter assisted me with a demonstration on how we can invite participants outside of Anchor to our Record with Friends sessions, and they don't even have to have an Anchor account to participate. This was an exciting discovery. I also shared a new feature for Amazon Echo owners called Alexa Groups, which allows for tying multiple Echo devices together so that they can play music simultaneously throughout a home or office. That's a free option. I shared my take on the Record with Friends missing dialer option. Bernie shared his Anchor video creation, where he does a marvelous job of compiling Anchor voices together in a montage audio. And he featured many voices from our international Record with Friends meetup. I had an opportunity to do a Q&A session with Joe Dale of England, who inquired about the potential of Anchor as a podcasting platform. And we also discussed after that what content is capable of inclusion from Anchor in our podcast episodes. Kimberly Bonner reached out with what she had learned about how people appear in our Record with Friends list, and I confirmed the hypothesis with some testing. Kevin Touch inquired about the time limits with Record with Friends, and I shared the answer. Do you know it? On Tech Talk Tip Halloween Tuesday, 10:31, I asked Windows users the question if it was time for a tune-up and offered up a valuable solution, an extraordinary offer to get that done. It's still available, so tune in and get the details. It was presented via my Alexa Flash Briefing that currently airs weekly. You can listen to all of my previous week's Flash Briefings on www.techtalktips.com. Welcome Wednesday, 11-1, brought our newest addition to Anchor, where Anchor members team up and welcome new Anchor mates to the platform. What a great idea my friend Dr. Dan had to bring that to light. I had the chance to meet Alfredo in this venue, and I'm glad I did. Bernie called in, and we discussed the trail left when an only comment is deleted from our segments. Bernie also shared some great tips for loquacious listeners. Do you know what a loquacious listener is? Thoughtful Throwback Thursday arrived on 11.2, and so did Anchor version 2.15.2 with the ability to create longer podcast titles and expanded descriptions. Podcast categories were also expanded to give more choices to other popular subjects. Follow Friday. Just yesterday, I had the pleasure of a special Record with Friends with my longtime Anchor mates DJ Hay and DJ Jam Radio Jam's James Furschweiler. It was truly inspiring and very educational, and I always learn valuable lessons from these two awesome individuals. Interspersed throughout the week were more thought-provoking questions, comments, and ideas to spark our imaginations. Another information-filled week indeed, and hopefully you didn't miss too much. If so, you'll find most of the hot ones in the episode section. This coming week promises even more, so be sure to come back and explore. More Q&A Tech Talk Tip Buffet is coming your way today, so call in and ask away. Share some tidbits of your own and bring up any subjects that you wish to discuss. I'm looking forward to it. Let's get started.
Avi, Bernie in Ireland with a quick question about how you schedule things. Do you have something like Calendarly or another way that somebody can hit a page and book time with you? Just wondering. I could do this. I could look at your website and I could probably find the answer. But it's Lazy Web Time called the Tech Gourmet that you run on weekends, so I can be lazy. I don't have to do those clicks. I don't have to search Google. And if you have an opinion of what the crazy Asian uses, I think he uses Calendarly. Let me know. Let your listeners know. Thanks, Avi. Or should I schedule time to get the answer? Bye for now.
Bernie, thanks for asking that question. I do absolutely appreciate it. I use a service called Time Trade. It's been around for a while, and what it allows me to do is interact with my Outlook and my Google Calendar. So I use a number of different time pieces in place because, number one, I have an iPhone, I have an Android, I have
a Windows computer, I have a Mac, I want to be able to interact with all these devices and come up with a homogenized version. Now, there was a point in time where I was using the iCloud interface from Apple to interact with my calendar and my phone. But that became a problem because why? iCloud does not work very, very well. And I've been migrating a number of my clients away from iCloud synchronization to a Google Calendar environment because Google Calendar works much better. Now, how do you get Outlook to talk to Google Calendar? I use a integration from a company called Companion Link. I'm an affiliate for them. I love the way Companion Link.
Sorry, I haven't talked with that yet.
Why did she think I was talking to her? So, Companion Link allows me to automatically update my Google Calendar anytime I enter a transaction in my calendar in Outlook. And I then have that as my default calendar on my iPhone, and of course it is by default on the Android platform. So if I enter an appointment on my iPhone, it shows up on the Android through Google Calendar. That automatically synchronizes, so when I come back to Outlook on my laptop, boom, it has the calendar appointment in there, and it just works seamlessly. Now, how TimeTrade comes in is that will synchronize with my Outlook and Google Calendars to allow me to put those appointments I've already previously scheduled, and it blocks out that time. With TimeTrade, I can block out the time of the day and how many hours a day and in the week I want to meet with clients. And they can pre-schedule with me time into the future so that I know that they have a convenient spot. And anytime they book, they know that I'm available because those time slots are free. So it's very, very cool. It allows for a very simple integration. It's not expensive. It's less than $100 a year to be able to block out that calendar, which is much less than many other types of services. I like to pay for a calendar because I want it to be reliable and I want to be able to scream at people if something stops working. So that is my solution. TimeTrade.com is the answer. You can check it out, see if it would work for you. Of course, there's a number of different products out there that do similar things. I just happen to lock into that one, and I haven't moved to a different one. So that's my answer. If you have any detailed questions about that or the process I use, let me know. Happy to help.
You know, that's very interesting with the listening and engagement. And a lot of times I find people may not actually listen. And sometimes I, quite frankly, don't care. But it bothers me when there is such an episode and I explain something specific and a person asks me a question that I answered in the episode. But that tells me that they did not listen to the episode, because if they listened to the episode, then they wouldn't be asking me that question.
Bernadette, you know, sometimes people listen to things, but they don't actively listen to things. So they may hear something that you intended to communicate effectively, yet one, they don't fully understand it. Two, they didn't really get the whole meaning of what you said. So for them to call in and request maybe some elaboration on what you said isn't a bad thing. You know that. I always invite that because I know that things can be said in a way or quickly or in using words that don't fully convey the meaning to that specific individual when they're very meaningful to you. So I take that with a grain of salt in terms of whether they listened or not. And sometimes people miss stuff. You know, they'll listen, but they just miss it. So I'm okay with that. I like the fact that people are engaged to the point where they know enough, they've learned enough that you know the material to be able to answer the question. So they ask you. And I think it's cool. Some people just call because they want to be heard and they want to show that they're interested in what you're doing. So there are a number of reasons why people call in. There are a number of reasons why people like to contribute. And for any reason that someone takes the time to spend with you on your station is value to me. And I appreciate any time someone would call. So I appreciate your contribution, Bernadette, and thank you. Have a great day.